From the studios of WICR at the University of Indianapolis, I'm Richard Brendan, and this is Journey's Fire. You know, whatever our current situation, we can all benefit from more peace and calm in our lives, especially this time of year. We're going through COVID right now, and it's so stressful for so many people. Some of you who are listening, unfortunately, perhaps have lost some friends or loved ones through COVID. I know many people are laid off, so finances are a struggle. We've had some stress in the political arena. Well, now there's a book out that I believe is balm for me in time like this. The book is called A Moment of Calm, Meditative and Reflective Readings for Inner Peace. And the author is Diana Ensign. Diana Ensign is an award-winning author who writes about the human spirit. For over two decades, she has explored spiritual teachings and wisdom traditions from a variety of sources. Two of Ensign's books are Independent Publisher Book Awards, gold medal winners. The IPPI Award showcases the best books from throughout North America and recognize merit and reward authors who take chances and break new ground. And joining me today is the author Diana J. Ensign. Ensign is an award-winning author who writes about the human spirit. For over two decades, she has explored spiritual teachings and wisdom traditions from a variety of sources. Two of Ensign's books are Independent Publisher Book Awards. That's the IPPI, gold medal winners. The IPPI Awards showcase the best books from throughout North America and recognize merit and reward authors who take chances and break new ground. Additionally, Ensign is a two-time Individual Advancement Program grant recipient awarded by the Indiana Arts Commission. Ensign also writes the popular Spirituality for Daily Living blog found on her website, and she's joining us today from her home in Indianapolis, Indiana. Diana Ensign, welcome to Journey's Fire.
Thank you so much, Richard, for having me.
Actually, you've been on three other times. This is your fourth book, and I'm such a fan of your writing. This will make your fourth interview. So I'm honored that you came on. And every time you write a book, it seems like it's perfect timing for that book to come out. This one, A Moment of Calm in an Age of COVID and Layoffs and Political Upheavals. What perfect timing for this book now?
Yeah, it's been very stressful with the pandemic and the election both. And so sometimes the things I'm writing about are the things I need myself. And I certainly need, like all of us, calm and peace and, you know, some serenity to my days as well.
Yeah. When did you get the idea for this book?
This book was back in July. So what the pandemic was, in March, mm-hmm. and I had finished up the prior book, the Freedom to Be book, and everything got canceled. So my talks and my interviews and all my plans were canceled. And then my daughters came to visit, one from New York and one from Chicago, because things were so crazy in New York at that time and scary. And so they were here for a little while. And then in June, they went back. And then in July, then I had some time on my hands. And so that's when I decided to do a book that would just help with calm and with peace.
Yeah, and a lot of the articles in this book are taken from your blog that you've had for some time. You're such a gifted writer, and later in the program, we'll direct people to your website, and they can take a look at that as well. But in the introduction, The first thing you write is, first, let me begin with a few words about the importance of self-care. And then a few paragraphs down, you say, at the beginning of each section of this book is the reminder to take three slow, deep breaths. Mm-hmm. Share why that is so important.
Well, that relates to the title, which is A Moment of Calm. So we can take three slow, deep breaths. If you were to set your stopwatch, that takes less than a minute. And so we can do that any place, any time, you know, at the hospital, while driving, you know, whatever's going on in our lives, we can take a moment just to take the three slow, deep breaths. And so that is something that helps with stress. And, you know, when we talk about stress, this is what I mentioned in the introduction, you know, stress can be incredibly harmful for our physical health, you know, strokes or heart attacks and headaches, and it can be harmful for our mental health, sleep disorders, depression, anxiety. And so taking the slow 3 deep breaths from the diaphragm can actually reduce stress. And I will tell you, I was very excited because I wrote that back in July, and this is something I personally found true, which is why I shared it, because it's helped me in my life. But in the Science of Mind, in this December's issue, the scientist, neuroscience researcher, Andrew Newberg, mm-hmm. who's an MD, mm-hmm. I don't know if you're familiar with them, him and his partner, Mark Waldman, in this issue, they say, breathe and remember your diaphragm. There's a substantial evidence showing that diaphragmatic deep breathing exercises are the most effective ones for dealing with physical and emotional health problems. It can reduce in-the-moment anxiety. It may lower cortisol levels. It can help lower blood pressure, decrease anxiety. It can promote relaxation and improve sleep quality. So with normal breathing, you take about 12 to 14 breaths a minute, but with controlled diaphragmatic breathing, you take only 3, what do they say? You take 5 to 7 breaths or less a minute. Mm-hmm. And so I was so happy when I read that just like yesterday, because it, you know, it's nice to see affirmation in science that matches what, you know, we find in our own personal experience or what we found in, you know, yoga or Tai Chi or meditation, that the deep breathing is relaxing and helpful.
You have been a very passionate practitioner of meditation. When did that mm-hmm. start for you? How many years ago?
I think the meditation was probably 15 to 20 years ago.
Okay.
Yeah, a couple of decades.
Mm-hmm. What got you into it?
You know, I think at that time I was going through a divorce. Mm-hmm. I had a miscarriage, a number of, you know, life crisis things that you know, we can experience, maybe career issues. And, you know, I met some people. I was at a play, and they were sitting at a table together. And I said, oh, how do you all know each other? And they said, you know, oh, we all go to this meditation sangha where we meditate and read about Thich Nhat Hanh. And, you know, that back then I didn't know what a sangha was. I didn't really know what meditation was, but I popped in for a visit one Sunday, and I've been going ever since and meditating ever since. Yeah.
And I know that's a passionate topic for you to talk about, and that's why this book mm-hmm. fits you to a T, I believe. You mentioned some of the challenges you went through when you were younger, which was an impetus in you getting into meditation. You have a section called The Peace Behind Chaos early in the book. And I'd like for you just to share a little bit of what you're teaching in your book about that, because chaos is a word that a lot of people are using. There has been so much chaos, especially in the political arena, but chaos in terms of even people believing in COVID or not, or are they going to take a vaccine or not? And I have talked to so many people since March that have experienced such a high level of stress. Mm-hmm. But it is possible to step back from that and cultivate that inner calm inside. So share a little bit of what you shared about peace behind chaos.
Yeah, well, one of the things I mentioned is just getting in touch with our heart space, because like you said, if you can step back and you can breathe and you can recenter and reground, then I think you are open to information and knowledge and accurate information in the world, you know. So rather than arguing about it, for instance, rather than picking a political side or having a debate about, you know, a serious health issue, you know, to be able to step back and meditate and say, you know, what do I need to do to take care of myself, and what does the science say? And, you know, so that's a way to center and ground ourselves. And then, you know, when we're dealing with other people, which can be contentious, especially social media, you know, does not give us a chance to sit, you know, across from each other or listen mindfully or compassionately. It's not a good medium for dialogue.
Right.
And I think first, just recognizing social media is not good for in-depth, compassionate listening and dialogue. It might be good for other things, mm-hmm. but it doesn't seem to lend itself well to that. And yeah. so recognizing that rather than fighting and arguing on social media, that may not be the best way to do it. You
know? I have learned that the hard way. It's like, yeah. this is not working. Just delete and get off right now.
Yeah, it's just not helpful. I mean, it can be helpful if perhaps both parties were willing to, you know, be kind and be compassionate and be open to listening. But, you know, I'm not sure that's the case for everyone who's on there. And I'm not sure those are the motives during a political election for everyone that's on there. So being mindful of that is helpful.
You remind the reader that peaceful moments are here, but we may need to make daily choices to seek them out. What are some of the daily choices you seek, Diana, in terms mm-hmm. of those peaceful moments?
Mm-hmm. So going for a walk is something that's very helpful for me personally. If I get out in nature, you know, it helps me get perspective. It helps me slow down. So walking, reading something inspirational, meditation, rest, you know, just having a couple of tea and just taking a moment just to watch the birds or sit on the porch or, you know, sit by the fireplace and just breathe for a few minutes so I can get recentered, regrounded, and remind myself, you know, oh, this chaos out here that's happening, I do not need to internalize that, and I can make healthy decisions when to engage and when to disengage for my own well-being and my own peace of mind.
Yeah. You know, I love the words ebb and flow, and sometimes when I'm praying for a hospice patient, I'll take them through a visualization or what have you, and I'll bring up about the ocean and the waves come in and they come out, and that gentle ebb and flow of things. You use that in the area of mindfulness, and you say the ebb and flow of being in the now. Now, I believe you have your book with you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I'd like for you to read that first paragraph on page 15 because it comes from one of my favorite Tom Hanks movies and one of my favorite scenes in Castaway.
Oh, okay, sure. So this is called The Ebb and Flow of Being in the Now. It's in the mindfulness section. So there's a movie, Castaway, with Tom Hanks, where the main character, Chuck Nolan, is stranded on a desert island for 4 years after a plane crash over the Pacific. In order to survive, he makes use of whatever washes to shore. Despite desolate circumstances, Chuck decides he must go on. Later, when he is rescued and returns to civilization, he understands that his life will never go back to the way it was before. He says, "And I know what I have to do now. I got to keep breathing, because tomorrow the sun will rise. Who knows what the tide could bring?"
I tell you, that is such a powerful line out of that great movie. And then you follow up, and to the reader, you say, one of the challenges most of us face is our desire to control what happens in our lives. What have you learned about trying to be in control?
That we're not. We're not in control.
Yeah. And what happens when we finally learn the art, and I really do believe it's an art of surrender or the art of letting go.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think it does help bring the peace and the inner calm when we get that, you know, to that place where we figure out what can I do, what can't I do, what's within my control, what's not within my control. I mean, that goes all the way back to the Serenity Prayer. That's, you know, age-old wisdom that we I think daily, you know, need to navigate and try and learn and remember.
Yeah. One of the things I love about the sections also, you have an affirmation. I'm big in affirmations, and there's a powerful one in the section we just talked about, and you write, "Today I stay open to life's gifts. With reverence, gratitude, and well-being, I surrender all that I cannot control. I know joyful, brighter tomorrows await me." Can you also talk about the power of affirmations and how they can really be a great tool for us on our journey?
Yeah, affirmations, you know, they retrain our mind and they act like a sail on a ship. You know, what direction do we want to head? Because if our mind and our thoughts start spiraling in a very chaotic, frenetic, negative way, you know, then our whole mood goes down and, you know, we can go down with that. And so the affirmations are a way to sort of keep us afloat or remind us, you know, yes, I have inner strength. Yes, I will get through this. Yes, this storm shall pass. Yes, I am guided by life. I'm open to life. I'm in touch with my heart. So all those types of affirmations for me personally, they just keep me on course and they enable me to better do the work I want to do in the world.
Well, and I suppose in this convergence of science and spirituality, which has been going on for decades now, we're finding that through that and through meditation, for example, we can rewire our brains.
Yeah, I love when science, you know, goes hand in hand with the spirituality. You know, we need both. We need our minds. We need knowledge. We need facts. And we need the wisdom of how to apply those facts and how, you know, how to apply the science. So I personally love both science and spirituality, and I think they're all one in the same if you look at the big picture.
Yeah. Well, I so agree. And oftentimes science, what science does is prove some of the teachings of spirituality, which I think is really cool. There was a section in here that I loved. It brought out some of the life purpose work that I've done and a practice I used to have. But you have it in this book called A Moment of Calm. And I'd like for you to share with our listeners why this is important. And that's remembering why we're here.
Yeah, I think that section is talking about, you know, remembering both what it was like when we were children and also the other children on the planet and remembering, you know, that we're part of the Earth and what's important. I think, you know, that's what things like the pandemic or death or a crisis can, if we use it wisely, can actually show us what really matters, right, might be hugging our loved ones or our health or spending time with our friends. I mean, it helps us remember what's important.
Yeah, you say when we slow down our breathing, when we quiet our mental chatter and step away from our hectic schedules, we can more easily hear the gentle longings of our heart. And that was after a question that you ask the reader and the listener today, and it's a very important life purpose question, and that is, what is it I'm meant to do with my brief time on this planet? And don't you find, Diana, that also having an appreciation of impermanence and embracing our mortality, which I know you're very hip to, by doing that, it makes us realize that we do have a brief time here on this planet.
Yeah, that's one of the things in Buddhism that Thich Nhat Hanh teaches, right, is to be aware of impermanence. And I know in our culture, there's a lot of resistance to talking about death and loss and talking about grief. But I think it's actually the opposite of that when we talk about it, when we recognize it, when we honor our loved ones and share their stories, when we realize, oh, I'm not going to be here forever and my loved ones are not going to be here forever. You know, we make use of our time in better ways.
We talked about in that, I mentioned mental chatter. So I want to ask you a question. How do we let go of the mental chatter or clutter? Because we all have that. And it's so easy, even if we come out of meditation during a course of a busy day, to all of a sudden have those monkey minds. What have you learned in your journey that helps you clear that out and let it go?
Well, I'm going to go right back to the beginning again, which is the three slow deep breaths. Okay, and then just breathing and taking time for self-care and going for the walks, you know, looking out at nature, being in the present moment. Those are the things that help me. That's why I share it again and again and again, is to take the deep breath before each reading, because that will slow everything down. And I would say another thing that personally helps me sometimes is just being curious about, oh, that's an interesting thought. Why am I having that? Where's that? Where did that come from? You know, that little fear, you know, and be curious about it and be I think the breathing helps us be aware. Oh, those are my thoughts. Aren't those interesting? I wonder if they're true.
Yeah. Yeah, it's almost like choosing to sit with that thought for a while instead of racing ahead with some others.
Yeah, or just assuming that you know everything about everything instead of stepping back and saying, oh, yeah, is that a storyline? Is that an assumption?
Yeah.
Have I actually talked to that person? You know, have I done my research? You know, is that true? I think that's important for all of us to be able to do that.
Boy, there's some beauty, I think, in the not knowing. It seems like the older I get and the more I grow in spirituality, the less I realize I know.
Mm-hmm.
I said, Richard, you thought you were all that about 10, 15 years ago, 5 years ago. You're not, dude. So, there's some humility in that.
Yeah, humility. And the mystery, I think, is a good thing.
Yes.
Yeah,
I do too. One of my favorite teachers, Richard Rohr, talks often and speaks often about mystery and the beauty of that word. And even, hospice workers are often called midwives to the mystery because death in many ways is a mystery.
Mm-hmm.
And so we have that in life as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, no one knows for certain, right, what happens afterward, you know, after we die. And all the religions, this is my opinion, but all the religions, they can serve us and they can help us, but they're all just paths. They're all just a path we're following. They're not going to tell you what the mystery is necessarily because you don't know for certain what that is.
Boy, isn't that the truth? And really, to piggyback on various things we've already talked about, there's so many people that try to plan out their whole lives and they get discouraged when it doesn't work out that way. And that's why life is a mystery. I mean, John O'Donohue said, I'd love to live like a river flows, carried by the surprise of its own unfolding.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's all a river. That's what Hermann Hesse says. It's all a river. It's always moving, changing, ebbing and flowing. So,
boy, and if you could step back and, again, practicing the things you're talking about today, it just hits me that you can have a new sense of appreciation and, dare I say, excitement of the journey that we're on.
Mm-hmm. And gratitude.
Absolutely.
And gratitude.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
You talk about gentle blessings. I just love those two words together. And in regard to that, there's a sentence in there that you say to the reader, like nature, we need to honor the cycles and rhythms of our lives. We too need to learn how to rest. Can you share more about that, about the cycles and rhythms?
Mm-hmm. Well, I have a section on nature because I do think it serves as a useful metaphor. So the cycle and rhythms of our lives, you know, it might be, you know, times where we're at rest and we're hibernating and we're going within, and there might be times of new growth where we're out in the world sharing our gifts or raising children. And you know, those cycles just continue, you know, all the time. They're changing the rhythms. You know, we may lose someone we love and we start a new chapter, or, you know, we may enter the phase in our life where, you know, we want more joy or we want more calm. And so those, just like the rhythms of nature, it's going to ebb and flow and change, you know, spring, summer, winter, fall. Just, you know, that's just how life is.
Yeah, and we're in a very interesting time now. I think it's a very special time. You're right, nature is a superb teacher during times of uncertainty. What have you learned, Diane, about winter, and also with winter solstice coming up in a few weeks?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, winter, for me personally, it can be hard because I need a lot of sun, and we don't, in Indiana, we don't have access to as much sun. And so, you know, I think it can be depressing, but it also can be, you know, oh, you can go out for a walk and you can see kids playing, and it's both, you know, it's a time perhaps of going within and reflecting, and then it's also a time of appreciation of, okay, there may be things underneath the snow that I'm not seeing. There may be buds that aren't yet blooming, but I know that they're there. And so maybe a sense of faith and a sense of trust that the cycles are going to come back around.
Yeah. Yeah, what we might see as deadness because of nature and the cold, dark nights in earth, it's really the birthing of mm-hmm. new things.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, that quiet time where things are mulling and, yeah, they're germinating. And,
yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, turn to page 49 in your book, because after we do that, we're in winter and we're beginning to see that, and we can get very excited, I think, about getting clear about new beginnings or about things that has been birthing in our heart, and now's the time to really just envision it and nurture mm-hmm. it. But then there's that, what you call in the book, embracing the new emerging you. And just by saying that, that ought to be a lot of hope for a lot of listeners right now, because so many people have been beaten up this year. But embracing the new emerging you.
Mm-hmm. It has been a very stressful year and a very hard time. But I do feel hopeful. I think we are turning the corner. I think we will get a vaccine. We will have a new administration. We will have new ways of doing things. And I think a lot of that, though, is on us. You know, it's on us to birth ourselves. You know, what do we want? How do we want to be? What skills do we need to go forward in healthy ways? We get to ask those questions.
Yes.
And then we get to imagine, okay, how are we going to do this? If we want healthy leaders, if we want healthy governance, if we want healthy communities, what does that look like?
Yeah.
What are the skills we need to get better at, and how do we do that? And then do the small steps that get us there.
Yeah.
I think it's exciting myself.
I do too. And I think what will help our listeners, if on that page 49, you came up with three powerful questions. I've always believed, by the way, that open-ended questions are very powerful tools to allow you to, what you know, whatever we have inside us, to bubble up in time, that knowing, that sense of purpose. But could you go through each one of those questions, please?
Sure. So we start, when we read this section, like all the sections, with mm-hmm. the three slow, deep breaths, so that we can connect with our heart space, and we can pause and we can breathe. And then the questions are, when you have your hand on your heart and you're breathing, who are you today? What calls your heart to action? What speaks to the inner spirit of your being? What needs to be healed? What gifts are waiting to be brought forth? What sparks your deepest joy?
And I would imagine if they would write those down and then just ponder it. Don't try mm-hmm. to come up with a quick answer.
Mm-hmm.
And allow and see what comes up in time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I think sometimes when we just pause and we allow, it's sort of interesting, because sometimes, you know, we may not know the answer, but life will bring the answer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like Parker J. Palmer's book based on the Quaker teaching, Let Life Speak.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, people will ask the elders if they're searching for a career direction or life purpose direction. They'll call the elders, and in the church, Quaker church, it's the older people who are really wise.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll ask the question, well, what is life speaking to you? And then it causes you to say, oh, that song I kept hearing about. You know, all the signs and synchronicities and things.
Mm-hmm. So when you were talking earlier about the chatter mind, that's another way that I try to quiet my mind, is when I'm getting up in the morning, I try to remember, you know, what does life want of me this day?
Mm.
So that way I can stay in the present, and I'm open to receive, and I don't have to try and figure everything out. I can just ask that question and then see what comes. Sort of going back to that castaway story.
Yeah, so when you ask that question, then I'm sure mm-hmm. then you just let it go.
Mm-hmm.
And just then, but you're also sensitive to the various things that life might be bringing you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I would imagine it would help to have a journal of some kind during this process.
Yeah, I think for some people, journaling is helpful. For other people, it's meditation, walking, mm-hmm. painting, writing. You know, there's all sorts of ways to sort of slow down and get into that intuitive heart space where the answers sort of percolate and then come to us.
Yeah. You have a section on deep sorrow, and it took me back to your book that you wrote on grief, which was so well done when you interviewed so many wonderful people. And again, for our listeners, all these books will be listed on Diana's website. And you talk about quiet, still moments and grief from unexpected loss. I was just talking to somebody earlier today who had a parent who fell, and she needed some help that the family couldn't provide. And they put her in a nursing home. And unfortunately, in a lot of our nursing homes, that's where a lot of our elderly are catching COVID. Some ride through it and come out on the other side. This person's mom happened to die from it. In some way, I guess that was an unexpected loss. Perhaps it's an accident. But you talk about grief from an unexpected loss. What advice do you have or suggestions do you have for our listeners regarding that?
Unexpected loss doesn't give us time to process, and so I think it can be hard on our system. It can be a shock, and you know, just being with that is one thing. Just breathing with whatever comes up, you know, or even if nothing comes up, that's fine too. I mean, sometimes we're just sort of in a numb place for a while.
Yeah.
But it's different for everyone, and so I try not to give advice. I try to either say, here's what helped me, or here's what the Heart Guidebook talked about, here's what other people found helpful. And it, there's a huge number of things that different people find helpful or not helpful. And so I guess my suggestion would be, you know, you could read the Heart Guidebook, because there are close to 50 people saying, hey, here's what helped me. It was music, or it was my pets, or it was taking long walks, or just watching the sunrise and slowing down. It does, grief does center us in our hearts in a very direct way.
Yeah. You often share a kind of a term, I guess, and that's honoring my grief. What do you mean by that, honoring our grief?
You know, not running from it, not hiding from it. It's perfectly valid and legit, just like anything else. It's just that our culture doesn't always use that phrase, you know? And sometimes there's stigma depending on how the person died. And you know, in our current discussions, there's arguments about COVID. And instead of discussions about people who have lost loved ones and how to be compassionate and how to help people.
Yes.
So honoring the grief, it means being respectful of your own grief and recognizing that those feelings are valid, whatever they are, and then honoring other people's grief and recognizing our shared humanity and our losses matter to us.
Yeah, that is so huge what you just said. As a matter of fact, I have to confess that when I hear people talking more about, oh, COVID and whether it really exists or not, instead of all the loved ones who've passed away, I lose my compassion for those people. And then I have to go back through it again and let it all go and start over again. So,
compassion, this is for me, compassion, it's not like an automatic thing. Sometimes I think it requires understanding.
Yeah.
So maybe for me, like if I've met some of these people and I know something about their life story, I may not agree with them and I may be upset and angry, and rightly so, but I also can sometimes see, you know, if it's a relative, I can see something about their life where I say, oh, you know, I see if I were raised that way, if I had that particular life, maybe I would not have the same understanding either.
Yeah. So, yeah. Well, again, we go back to the beginning of the book. It's three slow, deep breaths. And we do step back. And you're right. When I do that, it makes all the difference in the world. And then you start seeing them from their perspective, where they're coming from. Yeah, I love that. I love that. We mentioned winter, and we are coming into the holidays. Several different major holidays are coming up for a lot of people. Unfortunately, holiday time can be a very stressful time. I know it's when most bereavement coordinators are busy doing grief counseling or having memorial services. It's also a financial crunch for so many people. I was distressed to hear an alarming statistic. I think one out of four children in our country is food challenged. There's a lot of people that don't have a lot to be thankful for during this time. So it produces a lot of grief or stress, or someone has lost maybe a spouse or a child, and the holidays come up with that. You have some suggestions in terms of letting go. I think it's starting on page 83. I thought it was important if you could just kind of go through each one of these, because they're very helpful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mentioned letting go. So consider releasing expectations, for instance. You know, we put so much pressure on ourselves during special occasions, and you know, it's, again, that reminder not to lose sight of what's really important, you know. And so letting go, especially during the pandemic, you know, expectations about how things used to be or could be or should be, it's just not helpful. You know, those aren't going to help us. So, you know, letting that go. And the word should, you know, should we be happy? Or, you know, we don't have to be happy. We can be gentle with ourselves. We can be gentle with other people. It is hard right now for a lot of us.
Yeah.
And letting go of control, you know, recognizing, okay, we can't control that there's a pandemic right now, and maybe we can't be with our loved ones, or we can't control that, you know, a place of business has shut down, and, you know, letting some of that go. And judges and resentment don't help us either. You know, the grievances keep us locked in a place that can be unhealthy and unhappy. And so just trying to set some of that baggage aside, you know, at least, you know, for a few minutes or for a day, you know, see if we can let some of that go. And then fear, you know, just feeling our fear and other strong reactions, you know, without immediately reacting, you know. So simply being with those emotions can give us some inner strength, you know. We release the fears and we just sit with them.
Yeah.
And then we ask, and then we do the breathing, and then we ask, you know, what really matters in my life? What can I do? What direction does life want me to head? What do we need to learn from all of this? Are we learning something, you know, rather than just spreading and worrying and stressing? Is there something here that we collectively need to learn?
Mm-hmm.
And if so, what might that be?
Yeah. And actually, the things you're talking about now kind of cover what we've already talked about and what you address in more detail in this book. And a lot of it's under the category of slowing down, of breathing more slowly. You know, I just found that it's so easy to get caught up in the energy, to get caught up in the energy of the traffic as people go about to their appointments or perhaps even shopping, to get caught up in expectations. And so I think those practical suggestions are really so helpful. And so your affirmation for all of us is, I release expectations, fears, and judgments. I release outdated ideas of what it means to celebrate. Instead, I embrace what soothes my soul. I mean, that affirmation alone, a person could just rest on for a while.
Yeah, just do some self-nurturing and self-care and breathing and sit by the fireplace and, yeah, watch the snow and just do the self-care.
Yeah, yeah. And part of that also, and it has everything to do with that moment of calm, inner peace, you have a section on healing our wounds, and you shared something personally that I did not know you experienced until I read it in your book. It's on page 92. And you shared about having a miscarriage.
Yeah. I mentioned that what helped me was lying on the ground by the trees and just releasing that sorrow to the roots of the trees. I mean, I don't think we can do that in the wintertime. But, you know, that idea of releasing and turning it over and letting it go. I mean, I don't talk about that a lot, but, you know, deep sorrow, I think as we get to know people, we all of us, because we're human, we have had losses.
Yes.
We have had sorrows. And I think that breathing and stepping back, and maybe the lesson is, how do we care for one another and recognize that we do all have sorrows, and how do we start to care about each other?
I think what you write in this book, and purposely we're not covering all of that, there's too much information and inspiration in this book to cover in an interview. Plus, I really encourage our listeners to purchase a copy of this book. And the other thing I loved about this book, because I started doing it, I will thumb through it and just see where my thumb lands. Oh, that's my reading for today. I don't know if you had thought about that. The book can be used that way, but that's how I've been using it. It's been kind of fun. But getting back to the healing, I think it's so easy. I remember Leo Buscaglia, this used to drive him nuts back when he was alive, and he was writing a lot about love, but there would always be these books about 10 steps for this and 22 magic formulas for that. And you kind of address that a little bit in this book on healing. Healing isn't all about that. There is no formula for that, is there?
Right. No magic wand, no 10 steps, no 7 steps, because our life is a process, and we're all different and we all need different things. And so, you know, maybe the 7 steps give us some guidance and are helpful, you know, if we want something uplifting, but our lives are bigger than that.
Yeah.
And our losses are bigger than that.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, Diana, we're going to page 121 now. And you share a little bit about my all-time favorite movie, Dead Poets Society, and what that's about. And I'm wondering if you could read maybe a couple of paragraphs right from your book on that page. Appreciate each day.
Yeah, okay. So this is called Appreciate Each Day. And the movie The Dead Poets Society portrays the poet's absolute free spirit to be whatever he or she feels passionately called to be. The movie highlights the vigilance required to resist that strong pull toward conformity where everyone walks in step. It also demonstrates the importance of standing up for what we believe, even when we are the first or the only one to do so. Lastly, it shows the need to continue on with our lives even after the loss of people we hold dear to our hearts.
Yeah, that's huge, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, you're
and
right.
And then it just goes on to say it takes courage to live our lives, courage to get up in the morning, courage to, you know, go about our day. But that's precisely what makes life worthwhile, is that courage to love and that courage to keep going.
Yeah, you talk, really what you're talking about is being vulnerable and being authentic. You write, real courage is being honest and completely vulnerable. It's the quiet voice that whispers, I need help, or I'm at a loss here. It requires courage to say out loud, our marriage has had some rocky times, or I'm feeling lonely today. It's humbling to admit, I don't know why that happened, or acknowledging, I don't know what happens after we die. And the interesting thing is, when people do that, it opens up for a deeper and more authentic conversation. People start feeling real to me when they start acknowledging. I used to say years ago when I started this radio show that I stopped following all those people that believed in their own press clippings. So, because we all have great press clippings and websites, as well we should. But the ones that will, in an interview or in their book, be vulnerable enough to share their own inadequacies or their own insecurities. That, as you say, is real courage.
And I think when we do that, it's interesting, because then we find that the people we're talking to say, oh yeah, me too. You know, I feel scared when I'm putting out my creative work, or, you know, actors and actresses, you know, throw up before they go on stage, and you say, oh, okay, I didn't know that a lot of people felt that way. You know, I'm not the only one who feels scared or nervous or needs help or, you know, has trouble in the marriage or whatever it is. I think when we do share, most people are going to nod their head and say, uh-huh, yeah, because we're human.
Yeah, yeah. What do you hope the reader takes away most from this book? When they get a copy of this book?
The practice of the 3 slow deep breaths. I think, you know, a lot of us who have had, you know, maybe meditation or Buddhism or these other things, I think that's a little further down the line. I think if we can start with the three slow, deep breaths and pause and calm and ask the questions, mm-hmm. what do I need? You know, what helps my heart? Then, you know, that will lead us forward in healthy ways. And then maybe it's meditation, or maybe it's music, or maybe it's something else, teaching or advocacy or a new scientific invention, I don't know. But I think I would like us to step back before saying, oh, we should meditate or we should do this, and just breathe and just take a time out. I think if the pandemic has taught me anything, it's I need to breathe and I need to take a moment just to calm down.
Yeah. The book is called A Moment of Calm, Meditative and Reflective Readings for Inner Peace. The author is Diana Ensign. Diana, it's another wonderful book. I always say I love each book, but I love this one now. It's my favorite, I guess because of the times we're in and because it's got 75 beautifully written essays in there. For our listeners, will you please share your web address?
Sure. It's just my name, Diana Ensign. So DianaEnsign.com.
Wonderful. Diana, thank you so much for the work you're doing in the world and the light that you shine in your world, and for the gift of another great book.
Thank you, Richard. It's always an honor to talk to you and to be on your program.
Once again, you can visit Diana on her website, DianaEnsign.com, DianaEnsign.com. And I encourage you to pick up a copy, actually several, because these books would make great gifts for many of your family members and friends, A Moment of Calm. You know, reading this book, and actually reading other books that Diana has written, because there's a general theme in there, I think of the word sanctuary. And the definition of sanctuary is a sacred place. Now, it could be a haven for nature, animals, plants, the sick, or diseased, or other species. It could be a special place or experience we may withdraw into for safety and comfort, peace and solace. Or it could be a feeling or need for personal space and time within the comfort of ourselves. Well, with an inner sanctuary, which is certainly what Diana talks about in her new book, we welcome ourselves home in each moment of our lives. With an inner sanctuary, we can create sanctuary everywhere we go. You know, the true meaning of sanctuary, a place to feel safe, a place where one can be completely oneself, a place of supported independence, a place to live and die in peace, a place of deep connection on a heart and spirit level, a place of love, honor, and respect for all beings. So with an open and strong, full and clear heart, we can create sanctuary in every moment of our lives. And by the way, this book will be a great tool to help you do that. So welcoming each moment, we can walk the way of peace and the way of the heart and extend sanctuary to everyone we meet, offering a place of peace, even in a passing interaction. Now, you might think it's exhausting to walk through your days bringing love to every moment, but it's actually energizing. What saps our energy, I think, is the energy it takes to try to ignore the pain of the world and to shut off connection. That is our natural way. I believe that if we meet the world with love in our hearts, and a silent communication of caring takes only a second, we return home feeling stronger from the moments of acknowledgement that we are all connected. In closing, here's a wonderful reminder in a song by Donna DeLore.
Wake me up. Thank you.
Every moment is
I so love that song, and it ties in nicely to the truths and the wisdom that Diana Ensign was sharing in her book, A Moment of Calm, Meditative and Reflective Readings for Inner Peace. And again, please visit her online at dianaensign.com. I want to thank you for joining me. Get the word out about the show, Journeys Fire with Richard Brendon. You can check us out on iTunes or go directly to the site, richardbrendon.com. I also want to thank engineer Genesis Brown and production coordinator Angel Richardson for helping to make this possible. And I want to wish all of you who are listening a very happy holidays for you and your family. I'm Richard Brendon. Here we're bringing love to life, one broadcast at a time.